There's a huge problem about the air that puts up energy. And it needs to be relooked at. And that actually led to problems with some provinces not doing what they're supposed to do towards NHLS. And that was handled by department. And I take it that Utani is the chair or the president of that particular committee, which would need to hear what's going on in that front. And there are other things that are happening in HLS where there's restructuring of the organization. Now, in restructuring the organization, not knowing whether we're going to change, we're going to amend the law or not to amend the law, sometimes some of the things might be premature. But since we're not there, we're just doing oversight. We would need to hear. We had requested that we need to be informed about those things. But unfortunately, I don't think we've had good discussions as to what is the restructuring, if it's going on. But if it's not going on, then it's no problem. But if it's going on, we need to know what's happening, especially looking at the fact that there might be amendments on the law. But the other things are going to come. But at least you're here now. You want money. Let's talk about it, and let's move forward, and then we'll ask you questions. As I said, you will make your presentation, and after the presentation, we go for lunch. We're hoping that the lunch will be ready. We're going for lunch, and after lunch, we'll interrogate you. Thank you. Well, maybe the NHLS. Can we have the members introducing themselves? We don't have the full complement of the members, by the way, because this is usually not our day. Our day is Wednesday, but because this week is a committee week, we thought that it was important that we should have this meeting, and we're rushing so that by the time we pass the budget, we know exactly what will be passing. So we don't have a lot of members here, but I'll ask the few that are here to introduce themselves, and then we come to you. Okay, so we start with you, Martin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning, NNBC School. Good afternoon. I'm Denise Robinson. Thank you. Hi, good afternoon, Cheryl and Dudley.
Those are the members that we have. I'm Vivian Kolkwana. Okay, we'll give over to the leadership.
Good afternoon. I'm Gonda Pere, and I am a newly appointed chairperson. And I have with me from the board Dr. Randera, who is the deputy chair. So thanks very much. I'm pleased that the portfolio committee is devoting so much time to the NHLS. We do need to tell you what our report on the plans that we've given you previously. Because we're a new board, most of the members on the portfolio committee, on the board are new. We had our first Indaba over the last weekend. So we are not yet in a position to report to you the new plans that the board has for going forward. But we can report to you, the CEO will report to you on what plan the last board had put in place, and the achievements towards that plan that we have. We are fortunate as a board that the last board built a very solid foundation. So we are able to take over when the organization is in a relatively strong position. And we will try to, the meeting that we had over the weekend, one of the emphases was, how do we build a national health laboratory service that is responsive to the needs of the country, the poorest of the poor? How do we ensure that we put in place structures that respond to the laboratory needs of those people? So I'm not going to speak too much because we're still learning, and I hope members understand that as board members we are going to be handing over to the CEO to do a lot of the talking, but where it relates to issues of the board, the two of us will respond. So I'm going to ask, we have a very able team of executives in place, and we have here the CEO, Segi Pillay, we have the CFO, we have the company secretary, and the executive director for the coastal region, all present here today. Okay. So thank you very much. I'll hand over to the CEO.
Honourable Chair.
Sorry. Forgot to mention that even the department is here. I only recognize Tanya, but Tanya is not part of the department. Is it not so much that you have thrown her out of the department? So we welcome you again. Okay, continue.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity to present again. And as per your request, the presentation will focus on our plans for 2013-14 and then also to share with the committee what our budget for the 2013-14 is. And then we'll take some questions thereafter, Chair. So, Chair, actually coming after Professor Abdul Karim's presentation, it just makes it a little more difficult for us because I thought he had done an excellent presentation earlier on. What I'm going to focus on, Chair, is to remind ourselves on the five-year plan. So start off with that. So just to, I'm sure members in the other presentation will recall the NHLS five-year plan. Then to talk about what informed our 2013-14 operational plan, and then to share you a little bit of detail around what would be the expectations from an NHLS perspective to respond to the national imperatives from a diagnostic laboratory medicine perspective, and then I'll end up with the budget check. So to go back and remind ourselves and really about what the vision and mission of NHLS is, and this is really taken from the NHLS Act. So we're looking at a vision to be a leader of pathology service, surveillance, and academic health services. And Chair, the three aspects that have been covered there talk firstly to the first mandate around service delivery, which is a core mandate of NHLS to support the public health system. The second mandate is a surveillance mandate, which really talks to the institutes, the National Institute for Communicable Health and the National Institute for Occupational Health. And there's a third mandate, which is the mandate on which service is really informed, is the Academic Health Sciences mandate. And it's the training of the next generation of pathologists, the provision for the training of technologists, technicians, scientists and other laboratory health professionals. Our mission is really to focus on providing a high-quality service, addressing the issues of affordability and sustainability, and as I had indicated, train for health sciences education, and to undertake as part of the training function is to do appropriate research that informs both the training and the service delivery mandates of the NHLS. So, Chair, we've got some values there. You've seen that before, so I'm going to skip that and come to how did we, in fact, develop not just the five-year plan, but the 2013-14 APP. And we're very conscious of the fact that although we may have a five-year plan, the environment in which we're working right now, Chair, is a rapidly changing one, from the changes around NHI to the new imperatives that the national minister has identified, and the fact that we also have a new board, or at least a board that's come in more recently, and there may be a different kind of perspective coming from that board. So we're constantly keeping all of that in mind. And so we've used a couple of documents. The first document is a Maputo Declaration, Chair, which I think you're already familiar with, and this was on the strengthening of laboratory systems. It was WHO conference that was held in Maputo in 2008, and it really informed the focus around laboratory medicine for the African continent. So we looked at that and looked at its relevance for South Africa, given our own stage of development. The new imperative and the new focus from the National Minister of Health now is around non-communicable diseases, So we looked at the Maputo Declaration on Non-Communicable Diseases and looked at how that is going to inform the provision of diagnostic laboratory services going forward. Then we looked at the HR development plan, because training is an important mandate for NHLS, and the National Department Program of Action for 2009. We've obviously, in year three, Chair, of the five-year plan, and we've gone back and reviewed the first 2 years and looked at the extent to which we've achieved what we set out to do, and secondly, whether or not that's appropriate in the current setting. We've also reviewed last year's annual report in informing the 2013 plan to look at what we've achieved, what we haven't achieved, and whether or not we need to carry some things over. We've looked at the national service level agreement that the national ministers concluded with the president, and how we should be enabling the priorities that he's identified. And clearly the biggest thing that faces us as a nation now going forward is the NHI Green Paper and the related planning documents associated with that, so that we can be beginning to think about where does diagnostic laboratory medicine fit in within that context. So the planning process itself, I've talked about the five-year strategy, I've talked about evaluating the last two financial years and the review. And last year, with the board who's just currently completed their term, we had done a two-day planning workshop that included both the executives and board, where the operational plan that you're now going to hear about was presented, was reviewed by the board, changes were suggested and eventually approved. And as you know, Chair, this also has to get signed off from the National Minister of Health, and the plan is with the Minister of Health, and a couple of weeks ago it was tabled. So, Chair and Honourable Members, the National Minister has a 10-point plan. And so in looking at the 10-point plan, we developed a diagnostic laboratory 10-point plan, and we've looked at how do we ensure alignment between the minister's 10-point plan and his imperative for what he wants to see happening in the country, and how do we come in behind that to enable that process. So we've identified 10 points, and in the workshop that we just had last week that the chair just spoke about, some of these aspects may in fact be reviewed as we're going forward. But for the 5 years, the 10 points is the first imperative is about a new service delivery model. And the new service delivery model, Chair, is really asking ourselves the question. We in a three-year cycle of 5 years, the first 5 years of NHLS was looking at the creation and establishing of NHLS, and the second and consolidation, bringing together the different fragmented parts of NHLS or laboratory providers into a single entity. The second 5 years of NHLS was really to look at the financial stability, and a lot of energy went into that. We're now in the third five-year phase of NHLS, and in this particular phase, Chair, it's really about dealing with the fundamental issues around the model. Because in bringing it together, we've been quite successful. But whether or not this model responds to the new imperatives, particularly around NHI and the new focus around TB and HIV and the stuff that Professor Abdul Slim Karim talked about. And so for this period, we've identified as critical, one of those 10 points, is developing an appropriate service delivery model. But more importantly than all of that is one that is going to be affordable for the public health system going forward. So we've had the discussion around cost-effective, and I think that we presented last year sometime around whether or not we're cost-effective. But the discussion has to move to the focus around whether or not we can afford it within the resource and envelope that's available to the national and provincial departments of health. The second part talks about a best-fit delivery model, and the best-fit delivery model is for the new imperatives. Are we aligned? So the kinds of issues around the number of regions that we should be having, the number of labs that we should be having, are the kinds of things that we think it's time for us to review. And so, Chair, to pass at this point to answer part of your question about the changes that are happening in the NHLS, at this point in time, there are no changes that are happening. All that we are doing is developing a new roadmap, which will then be properly consulted, firstly will be reviewed by the board, and clearly we have to get sign-off from the minister and the National Department of Health before we do anything else, including the portfolio committee itself, before we do anything dramatic with respect to that. The third 10-point plan really talks to the question around quality. And again, there have been some perceptions around whether or not our quality standards are acceptable. So we put a strong focus on that. The Act itself, half of the regulations focus primarily to the question around quality. So understandably, we are quite focused around that. And then the second part of that quality issue is around customer-focused service. Now, the way NHLS has evolved, and the first 2 years have been really good 2 years in consolidating the service, but our sense is that we need to understand more what is it exactly that the provinces want so that we can respond to it rather than a service that we've inherited and just evolved to where we are today. So a very strong focus on understanding what provinces and military services and correctional services and other partners of ours require going forward. The fourth part is really around aligning our resources, our support services, and our infrastructure development to respond to these new service imperatives. So it's aligned with the first 2 points, the first one and two. And it's really the reason that we've identified this chair is because we need a focus now that says that support services need to be enabling and facilitating. While issues around finance is important, but we mustn't lose sight of the fact that we've been set up to respond to the provincial and national needs. Revenue will take care of itself thereafter. But this, we've highlighted this point because we want to engender a culture within NHLS which says that finance, HR, IT must be enabling to what we want to achieve from a strategic point of view, and not become the center of what we do. The fifth point is around our people, and Professor Karim talked about scientists earlier on, and what drives scientists to the way they function in an environment where salaries, etc., may not be the greatest. But NHLS, in many respects, is very similar. What drives the people in NHLS, from the pathologist right down to a support staff in the lab, is the desire to want to make a difference to the lives of the public, of patients that present at the public health system. But in doing that, obviously that alone can be a motivating factor for people to want to stay within NHLS, because we also have a workforce that's highly mobile, that's highly sought after by research institutions, by private sector providers, by international and local NGOs that work in the country. So a strong focus around what are going to be the levers and what are going to be the motivating factors to attract and retain people over and above the money issues. Because if we're going to be taking a strong focus on affordability, clearly we can't be putting more money into the salaries of people. Or we need to be much more strategic about how we do that. The sixth point is around prioritizing innovation. And again, MRC talked about innovation. We got even within NHLS, we got the most extraordinary talent. There were the world leaders in pathology. We got extraordinary technologists and technicians. But the issue is how do we coordinate and pull all that together to deliver innovation? Because that's the gap. In fact, the work around that MRC is doing around new diagnostics, we are also parties to that work around new diagnostics. But we need to pull together the expertise that we have and translate that into developing the next generation technology for not just for South Africa, but for Africa and other BRICS partners. And I think that there are some exciting opportunities in that particular area. And to do that, it's actually our third mandate, which is the teaching and research mandate, that in fact is going to inform that. And so for teaching and research for myself and for the board is probably the most important of the three mandates, because that's what's going to deliver a new model that's affordable and that has technology that's appropriate for responding to the future needs of South Africa. So that's the sixth priority. The seventh is around information. Chair, you're already aware, and we presented to yourself and to the honorable members, that we're sitting with some of the most powerful databases in NHLS. And we've not optimized the way that information is used to inform the planning at a national level, to inform resource allocation at a national and a provincial level, because pretty much we have a sense of what are the disease profiles, what are the patterns, where are the populations, where are people presenting with particular kinds of medical problems, and therefore it should in fact be, if we can harness that and present that back in a way that makes sense to planners and to policy makers, I think we're sitting with a very powerful resource that we've not optimized in a way to respond. I mean, we're doing a lot of surveillance, etc., but we need to pull that all together. So we've identified it as an important priority going forward for NHLS. In fact, it's a very important strategic advantage that NHLS has. The eighth point talks about stakeholder collaboration. And, Chair, you know that the magnitude of the problem that faces us tells us clearly that ourselves as NHLS are not going to be able to respond to all of the priorities. And so the need for us to develop partnerships with private providers, partnerships with NGOs, partnerships with international organizations, including donor organizations, is going to be the basis on which we can not only cross-pollinate and fertilize new ideas, but also to pool scarce resources so that we can respond to the new challenges. So we've identified stakeholder collaboration as critical, because there was a period within NHLS that we operated almost autonomously and quietly in some corner, as opposed to looking at what other people do. And for us, NGOs at the moment are important to us because they're quite flexible, and the opportunity for innovation together with NGOs presents some unique opportunities for NHLS to grow. So we've identified that as the eighth of our priority. And the ninth is really around a very important imperative for the country and its NHI. And clearly, we got to be responsive to that and begin to locate the diagnostic part of it within the broader NHI debate. So we've identified that as an important aspect. And clearly, we want to see ourselves to continue, as we currently are a provider of choice for the public health system. But when NHI comes in, we want to see ourselves clearly as a provider of choice for NHI. And then the last point talks to the green issues, the issues around environment and the community. And so we've identified that because, you know, we sit with medical waste, we sit with a lot of technology that we have to dispose of, we're sitting with lots of buildings that need to be reviewed from the context of saving energy, et cetera. So it's an important part of what we should be doing. And also as being part of a corporate citizen, we need to do the right thing from a green point of view. So that's the 10-point chair that informs everything that we do, both from a strategic point of view and from an operational point of view. Then just to remind ourselves that the Minister has a strong focus around the four pandemics. We have the most severe and very expensive burden of pandemic is that of HIV, TB, and AIDS that all of you know about. We have an acceptably high maternal and child mortality, and earlier on the MRC talked about that and the challenges that face us in that regard. We have an alarming and ever-increasing incidence of non-communicable diseases. And for us, this is going to be the next priority after TB and HIV. And we need to now look at, from a diagnostic point of view, both from the treatment perspective, but more importantly from the prevention point of view, where would we locate ourselves from a screening and testing point of view. So a strong focus around the NCDs, particularly around diabetes, chronic respiratory diseases and cancers and mental health, which is a priority. And so we need to review our test repertoires to see whether or not we're responsive to that. And the last issue is around violence and injury. And again, we've looked at that in the strategic plan. So the Minister in his NSLA talked about four outputs: increasing life expectancy, decreasing maternal and child mortality, combating HIV and AIDS, and decreasing the burden of diseases from TB, and strengthening health systems. And again, we've looked at to what extent can we play a role, not just on the service delivery side, but what are the lessons that are available within NHLS that will contribute to the health system's strengthening issue across the public health system? Chair, again in the NSLA and in developing the operational plans for 2013-14, we've looked at the 11 pilot districts, and we are actively involved in those pilot districts, and we're looking at different ways in which we can provide diagnostic services in those pilot districts. So that's one of the imperatives for us. The next issue is around the minister has been talking very eloquently and with a very clear plan around re-engineering primary health care and the district health system, and the talk around going back to Alma Mater in many respects. And he's talked about the specialist teams, the school health programs, and the ward-based primary health care. Now, from our perspective, we need to start asking ourselves the question, what does that mean for diagnostic laboratory service? So, for example, for the school health program, should we be developing a mobile lab that will go in together with the clinical teams that get into a hospital? So there's a lot of thinking that's already beginning around how would we respond from a diagnostic perspective to these new priorities. Then the minister has talked about clearly we're going to have significant increase in throughput, at least on the side of TB, HIV, and AIDS. And how do we upscale to respond to these new requirements in a way that doesn't push up costs considerably? So we're looking at those sorts of patterns. But together with that, with the focus around NCDs, there's going to be significant demand on laboratory services. In fact, it's not going to be the other way around. There's going to be increased demand around laboratory services, and how do we position ourselves and prepare for that. And then the minister talked about the two new medical schools. And it's going to be important for us, because we have teaching and research as a mandate, to ensure that we are aligned to be ready to set up new schools of pathology, if that's what is required in those schools. A medical school is going to have to have a school of pathology, because the pathologists don't only train postgraduate students. We also are actively involved in the training of undergraduate medical education, medical students. So we need to start now thinking now and mobilizing the resources that will go to ensure that the schools of pathology don't come as an afterthought in those two medical schools. And then, of course, the minister has talked about new teaching hospitals, and the new teaching hospital in KwaZulu-Natal and in other provinces. And again, Chair, we need to be clear and proactive that the laboratory services required in those hospitals, not just for service delivery, but for teaching the next generation of pathologists, technologists, and scientists, are planned for and are prepared as part of the overall planning for the new medical schools. And because NHLS sits slightly outside of the Department of Health, sometimes it's forgotten. And again, suddenly you get up on morning and you realize we need rooms for laboratory, we need teaching and training sites, etc. So there's dialogue that has started but needs to be accelerated around those areas. So, Chair, just to quickly give a sense of the gene expert. As you know, it's now a technology of choice that the department has identified. We've seen a fourfold increase in testing, and in under 8 months, we were able to increase the program within NHLS to respond. There's full coverage around the country, and by September of this year, we'll have 100% coverage of gene experts in all the sites, priority districts that the department has identified. Obviously, we do that in consultation with the department. But by September of this year, there will be gene experts in every point where the department has identified as a priority. And we've trained the staff and done all of that. So I'm going to... Sorry, Chair. I got a sore throat, so... hope I don't lose my voice halfway through the presentation, so I'm going to rush it up a bit. So on the service delivery model, Chair, we've identified four areas, and the nature of this work, Chair, I must say, is not a one-year piece of work. Some of it we will start in this year and finish perhaps in year two or year three. But the aspect that we've identified as the biggest priority for us is to explore alternate funding models for for teaching research and surveillance. As you know, the cost of these services are built into the price of the test. So it puts an additional burden on the province. And there's a robust discussion that's happening between ourselves and the National Department of Health to look at accessing the conditional grant, the health professional training grant, to pay for the teaching and the research functions. And we're already participating in the various committees. And I'm quite hopeful that in the near future, there may be a possibility of a separate grant, and that would reduce the burden on the provinces. With the surveillance function, which is the two institutes, Chair, you may already be aware that there is some discussion that's unfolding in the national department to look at the creation of a national institutes of public health, but I'm sure the department will talk to that more. But it basically, if that is created, then the funding, the difference in funding between what the department provides and what we have to carry will then be covered by other grants with respect to that. And we think that if that kicks in quite soon, then there could be a price reduction, according to the CFO work that the CFO has done already, that could be as high as 10, up to about 10% reduction in the prices across the board. Then the next issue is around the annual price increases. And we've been at great pains to ensure that whenever we ask for a price increase, that those price increases we keep well below inflation. And I'll talk about that a little bit in the last few slides. Then, Chair, we also recognize that NHLS can't just provide services and sit back. That it's important that a joint risk-sharing model begins to be developed. And to that extent, we've now looked at electronic gatekeeping, and that work started last year. We're continuing that work in this year's plan. And it's really to start looking at how do we set up tools that will manage inappropriate and unnecessary investigations at a hospital level. And so we've developed a set of tools. It's been piloted in 10 or 12 hospitals. We've seen some benefits associated with it, but the nature of it calls for a complete change in the behavior of clinicians and in the behavior of lab staff. So I think that the full benefit of it will take some time to bed down, but it's a strong focus now looking at how do we work with the provinces that we support to manage the services within the budget frames that they have, but also to do it in a way that doesn't compromise access to healthcare. And then the issue around a new service delivery model is how do we support the National Department of Health to complete the rollout of the gene expert and to do all of the other bits that go with it, the training, the development of new protocols, the issue around driving down costs, because the gene expert, when it was first implemented, was quite expensive. We, in fact, in collaboration with other international partners, we've brought the price down to below half. Then on the best fit service delivery model, and again, this is work. Some of this work started in the last financial year. They will continue in this financial year. Point of care testing, Chair, is the future, and there's a lot of discussion about how do we respond to really remote settings to provide testing that's on site. And so we've set up a unit that's evaluating now the new point of care platforms that are becoming available, and we do that in fact primarily with the external donor funds. And we've developed a document last year, and this year we'll start implementing it. The National Department is considering the document at the moment, a policy document on point of care, and it basically answers the question now about firstly, whether or not the instrument would be appropriate in a South African setting, and whether it's appropriate in an African setting generally, whether or not it will respond to our needs, because a lot of the point-of-care testing will do probably 8, 10, 20 tests. But if you have 40, 50 tests a day, then you can't place 3 or 4 instruments there. So where would the point-of-care add the most advantage on a continuum of point-of-care to a highly automated lab? So there's a lot of work that's being done on that front, and that work will continue in this year. Then to look at developing and implementing new turnaround time methodologies. Up until now, Chair, we've been measuring turnaround time in lab. But as you know, the only turnaround time that matters is the point at which the specimen is collected and the time at which a result is made available to a clinician. So we want to fix up the parts between the clinic and the lab. And so we're looking at solutions around the tracking systems, et cetera, and we piloted, implemented in three provinces, and this year we'll continue rolling it out. So at any particular point in time, we'll know where the specimen is. It does two things. If something goes wrong, we can then intervene. But secondly, it also gives us a sense of how the specimens are going to be flowing into the lab and how do we set up our response to that. So if we know at around 3 o'clock there's a massive amount of specimens coming in, we then align our staff to respond to that. And then the third issue is around implementing standardized laboratory technology framework. And this is around automation and the discussion around centralization versus decentralization. But this piece of work is quite a complex piece of work. It did start last year. It continues this year, and we're hoping that we'll finalize it in this financial year. But NHLS has evolved, Chair, and I've said this before. We've evolved around several labs coming together. But it really had a mix of platforms, some cheap, some expensive, some appropriate, some inappropriate. So we want to move to a situation where we agree up front what are the platforms that we want to use by level of care, by tiered lab. In an academic center, we want to standardize on certain platforms. In a district hospital, we want to standardize on other platforms. And we think that will give us two benefits. The first benefit is that we can negotiate better pricing. Because now we're using so many platforms that we're not getting competitive advantage from a volume point of view, both from a test point of view, but also from the number of instruments that we buy. And the second issue is that it's going to make it quite easy for training, because people can move between labs because the platforms are the same. Whereas if somebody moved from lab A to lab C and it's a new platform, then you've got to retrain, or people leave and come back, etc., it poses problems. Then the discussion, Chair, and this is the work that we've been talking about around the roadmap. What is the mix of centralization versus decentralization? Because in an environment where cost is the driving factor, we've got to find ways in which we can drive down costs. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that the centralization of some aspects will in fact drive down the unit cost of producing that test. So there's work that's being done on that, but Chair, we'll come back to you on that. So it's not something that we're going to implement. This is really basically the operational research work that's happening. Then on quality, we provide electronic access to laboratory results, and with the exception of the Western Cape, we're not seeing significant uptake of those results. And one of the reasons the perception is that we're slow is because a lot of the results are still paper-based. And until somebody files it into a folder, if a clinician comes and opens a folder, they can't find the result and they assume that we haven't done the test, when in fact it may not be filed. So we want to focus around changing the behavior of clinicians in other provinces so that they can utilize electronic results using mobile phones and internet to get that. The issue around quality and accreditation, we want to see more of our labs, and certainly all of our academic labs will be accredited by SANEZ. Now, we can't have every lab accredited, but we want to accelerate the accreditation process. And as part of this, in this year, there's a program now that's been looked at across the African continent called the Stepwise Program. And it really looks at where we are at the moment as a lab, where we want to go to. And then in an incremental way, you work your way up. And it's almost a kind of star rating. So 1 star, 2 stars, 3 star. And when you get 5 star, you're basically ready for SANEZ accreditation. So there's a strong focus around ensuring that every one of our 268 labs have that kind of internal accreditation, in addition to the academic labs having the international accreditation, the SANEZ. And obviously with that is the focus around external quality assurance. We have very good internal quality assurance programs, but the only judge, again, is what somebody outside says about our services. So a focus around, in this year, around external accreditation program. Then around aligning resources, support services, and infrastructure, Chair. The track care lab system that I talked about previously, we, by August of this year, we would have completed the rollout across the entire country. So we'll have a really modern lab information system together with a billing system. And I think that many of the problems that we've had with the previous very unstable system will go away. The next issue around aligning resources, and Che, you and I had a discussion as well around the issue around technology. And as new new vendors come in, and as our partnerships with BRIC countries are strengthened, and as we look at India and China as potential markets for technology, clearly we can't just take that technology and use it in South Africa. So we in this year we're setting, and in fact we've done a little bit of the planning work last year, but in this year we want to fully operationalize an internal health technology assessment unit that will evaluate all technology that comes into the country and look at it both from the point of its relevance to the service requirements, but also doing the economic evaluation that goes with it. But the health technology assessment will go beyond just the instrument itself. We'll also look at the sites in which this manufacture happens, and we may partner with organizations like the WHO and others to ensure that even the manufacturing of reagents, etc., meet international accreditation standards. So there's a focus, strong focus on the health technology assessment unit while the department sets up and finalizes the SAHPRA, the setting up of SAHPRA. Because we can't at the moment just use technology without any evaluation within NHLS. Then the focus around continuous productivity improvement. We're an organization that hires around 7,200 staff. And I think that there are significant areas for improvement on the productivity side of our people. So a focus around understanding where we are at the moment and how do we build that, but also in a way that doesn't put too much a burden on the staff themselves. But for the 8-hour or the 10-hour day that people are expected to work, or 12-hour shift that they work, are we getting the best out of the people that we hire? And then the last issue I've already talked about was around the logistics tracking system. Employer of choice, Chair, we've already established the NHLS Learning Academy, and when we present the annual report later this year, you'll see some of that. But this year we need to expand the number of programs that we offer within the National Academy, management and leadership development programs, strengthening our various layers of management in. And so together with the funding that we got from CDC, we set up this unit, and this year we'll expand it and include more programs on it. The focus around developing a succession plan, we can't compete with the private sector for pathologists and technologists. The salary differentials are quite big. So we want to look at growing our own, and I've said this in previous meeting, growing on our own, and it'll be linked to the Learning Academy. But clearly to have succession plans from the CEO right down to lab managers. And then if we want to look at productivity and drive a high-performing organization, then a single performance management system, which we are implementing right now as we speak, and by the end of this financial year, we'll have a single performance management system for all employees, from the chief executive right down to the lowest level employee. And the last point around employer of choice is about driving a new organizational culture. We have to accept and understand that we're part and parcel of the public health system, and our goal is really to be supporting the 8 out of 10 patients who present to public hospitals, and driving that same culture right to all our staff across the organization. Research and innovation, I touched on this already, but I said that this is what is going to drive the NHLS going forward. So innovating systems and processes to improve laboratories and health services delivery is a strong focus, and the plans talk to that. Research output aligned to national priorities. I think overall we do well, but I think there's still a lot of focus there. But the key part of the research output share is that we got us, in this particular financial year, we want to take the research projects that have been completed and look at how do we translate that into informing policy and service delivery on the ground. We've been quite weak in that area. So this year there's a strong focus around taking some of that work and translating it directly and hopefully informing the department and the provincial provincial departments of health on how we can improve that. And then international benchmarking against diagnostic best practices, because a lot of our pathologists and some of our technologists have very high international profile, so there's opportunities that present itself there for us to look at what's happening in other parts of the world, both developing and developed, and look at how we can use that those lessons to improve what we do. And then the last point here is around NCDs, and I think that the quicker that we get into a discussion around preparation for NCDs, the better, because it's those programs are already beginning to take root in the national department, and we need to be aligned to respond to that. Health information I talked about here, so I'm not going to go into that in any detail. I talked around the driving stakeholder collaboration. I think you got a sense of what I meant by that. And NHI is the next biggest thing that's going to happen for us as a country. So there's we engaged in all 11 pilot sites, and the plans talk to the detail around that, including the gatekeeping and all of the other things that we do. And as I had indicated, some of the strengths within NHLS may lend itself, Chair, to inform the health system strengthening across the board, in hospitals, in other parts, both from a control point of view, from a management point of view, and from a planning point of view. And then the last point around the NHI is whether or not there are opportunities for joint ventures. And the discussion and the roadmap will come back with more concrete proposals around this. But really, should we be doing any more investments in NHLS, or whether or not we should be looking at partnerships with other like-minded organizations to respond to the new challenges from a public health perspective? I talked about the greening issues. So, Chair, just to remind ourselves again, the strategic objectives and the KPIs, we use a balanced scorecard to monitor that. And the process for that is that every one of the objectives have specific activities. Each of the activities, and I don't have time, you got the document that we've circulated. I can't go into the detail right now. Each objective has activities, and for each of the activities, we have targets that are measurable, and they're monitored on a quarterly basis by the board. Well, initially they monitored by the executive of NHLS on a monthly basis. That rolls up into a quarterly plan. It then goes to the board. The board reviews that and approves or not approve. And once that happens, then it'll go up to National Treasury and to the NDOH. And the scorecard itself, Chair, is audited on a random basis by our internal auditors, and is finally in the final audit. It's audited by the auditors so that there's evidence that shows that we've achieved something. Then you can look here, Chair, it's quite small there, but you can see it in your... So there's the scorecard that we looked at, and the scorecard identifies, if you look at customer perspective, there are four perspectives that we've identified. Under customer perspective, we said we want to improve customer satisfaction, and we say what are going to be the activities? What are going to be the activities, and what are the targets that we've set? And it's presented in a comparative basis. So it goes back to 2010. We're now in 2013, so you can look at the targets that have been set. The previous board had reviewed those targets and have signed off on the targets. As the chair had indicated, some aspects may be reviewed in the context of the board identifying new priorities after having had discussions with the minister and others. So there's a scorecard. The detail is there. I'm not going to go into the detail itself because I've covered it at a high level in the other documents. The financial perspective talks to the targets that we've set for the year in terms of turnover, and I'll give you that detail in the budget now. It talks about the overheads. It talks about us wanting to reduce the cost and eliminate wastage within the system. There are targets set for creditors' days and debtors' days. And the same with employee perspective, which is the third perspective, and the last perspective is the internal perspective, which talks to quality and teaching and research. So, Chair, it's captured in that document. People can study that at their leisure. As I've indicated here, if you look at this document that's been circulated, the detail is there, and you can interrogate that. And then, Chair, to then start wrapping up around the budget itself, the budget, we've used several assumptions. The first assumption was inflation is, at the time it was developed, was running at around 5.9%. The salary increases, Chair, is more or less aligned to the public health system. In fact, it's slightly lower than the public health sector. We've, like the public health system, we've concluded a three-year agreement, and so we've built in to the budget a 6.6% increase for 2013-14. We've made the assumption, Chair, in this budget, and it's an important assumption, that there'll be zero growth in volumes. And the reason that we've made this assumption is because we're going to be working actively with the provinces to bring down their consumption patterns. Because with the current debt situation, we can't continue servicing the provinces at the levels at which they're currently consuming. We will do this in a responsible way. We will do this with accepted tools that are available to us. We will eliminate wastage and inappropriate and unnecessary investigations. But it's important for the committee to understand that we are assuming a 0% increase. A 0% volume increase. The test price increases, the assumption in this budget is we put a proposal to the National Minister for a 4% increase for this year. It's well below inflation. And we've based the budget on a 4% increase. Chair, as you're aware, this budget would have been developed 6 months ago because we got to get everything out 6 months ago to the National Department. So it's at that particular point in time, it's a 4% budget. And the next two points are equally important. The assumption is that there will be a 45-day debtors' day from our provincial partners. Right? At the moment, they're sitting on average at around 101.
Total average is 185.
185, and there's a slide that you'll see now. But we, in this particular budget, we've based it on 45 days, which means that provinces are going to have to pay their debts quite quickly as we get into the beginning of this financial year. Our creditors' days, Chair, and I've reported this previously to the board, is sitting at over 100 days. And for the budget assumptions, we've allowed for 30 days, but at least for 40 days. But I should say that 40 days is contrary to the PFMA. But we have to be realistic because if we can't get paid, we can't pay others. So we've made an assumption of 40 days for now, and we're sitting at 100. And in finalizing the budget, Chair, we've worked on a budget cash cover of 1.2 months. Now, for an organization of our sort, and actually for any organization that has to depend on revenue coming from outside, to have 1.2 months of cash cover is a really risky situation to find yourself in. If something goes horribly wrong in that month, you basically can't pay salaries or you can't do capital investments or whatever it is. So 1.2 is still quite tight, but it's a lot better than what we're doing at the moment, because at the moment it's really, as money comes in, we respond to stuff. And then, that is the budget cash cover, and then the targeted cash cover is 2 to 3 months. Now, we've never been anywhere near 2 to 3 months, Mr. CFO, for the last 4 years. But we have to get into a situation where we've done this. Because here, as I'd reported last year, that as a result of this, we're sitting with a three-year backlog in capital investment. Three-year backlog. And for those of us who are looking at what's happening in the rest of the public health system, once you get to that, the cost of trying to get out of that hole is going to be two or three times what it would have cost us had we done ongoing maintenance and ongoing replacement and ongoing refurbishment. So the cash cover is actually quite important from that perspective. So to deal with the budget itself, Chair, for the year, we projected a turnover of 4.8 billion rand, right? That's with a 0% growth in volumes. Our materials here at the moment constitute 28% of our total cost, and that's around 1.4 billion rand, just under 1.4 billion rand. Now, Chair, the materials are directly linked to the number of tests we do. So if we do more tests or we do fewer tests, that will go up or down, because that's just a matter of a lot of the technology today is cartridge-driven. You put a cartridge in, you get X number of tests. So that cost, while we can, while there are opportunities for us to improve wastage there, but it doesn't give you too much room to maneuver around. The labor and overheads constitute 55.8%, and that's a budget of 2.689 billion. And our capital expenditure for this year is 8.3% of our total spend. It's a little higher in terms, Ian will tell us that seems excessive. But remember, Chair, it's in the context of 3 years of capital backlogs. And we're making the assumption that the KZN dispute will get resolved. And so we've provided for 400, just under 400 million around that. And teaching and research at this particular point in time is 370 million rand that we've provided for. Obviously, that's only the routine costs associated. The people costs are already in the labor part of it, right?
No, it's in the bottom.
Well, it's in the bottom as well. So the 370, so it gives you a sense of how the budget is broken down. And if you're looking at labor as a cost of everything else, our labor is currently sitting at 65% of our total cost, an amount of 1.7 billion budget. And Chair, there's a breakdown at the bottom. You can see it graphically, but I think you've got a sense of what that is. And this is based on a 4% price increase for this year. Obviously, if the price increase is not approved, then we have to go back and revisit the budget from that perspective. Then the debtors days and creditors days, Chair, I put it up here because just to give you a sense of what's going on, the green, this graph here is the debtors days, and you can see it's well over 100 days on average. Now, there are some provinces that are doing exceptionally well, Mpumalanga being a case in point, because they are under 30 days,
16 days.
So there are provinces that are doing, Western Cape is doing really well, it's within its 30 days, but there are other provinces that are sitting at very high debtors days. And for us to be able to succeed, provinces have to pay us. And the one thing, Chair, that I think that is absolutely critical, at least the conditional grant part of it, there should be no delays with the conditional grant, because for the TB and HIV, they come with conditionalities, and we don't understand why that is not paid. And conditional grants at the moment, Dev, are sitting around 400 million, 500 million of the total debt. And that's money that was given to the provinces to actually pay for these tests. So there's a and you can see as a result of that, Chair, you can see what's happened to our creditors' days. I mean, clearly, if we don't have the money, this is going to get worse and worse. So we are now transgressing the PFMA as well because of this kind of situation. So it's not a situation that we want to find ourselves in, and it's not a situation that we want to see ourselves going forward. So you look at where there's the budget here. So you can see what a big drop we're expecting from there to here in terms of debtors' days, and from there to there in terms of creditors' days. And that's not going to be an easy task, because it's not for us alone to address. It's going to have to be done together with the provinces. So there's the debtors' days by province. So you've got a sense of where that is. So I'll leave that with you. And then to give you a sense, Chair, of how the capital expenditure is broken up to 400 million rand. Land and buildings are 212 million rand. Remember, for the inside of the building, although we occupy labs that are in hospitals, and those labs have been provided to us at no cost in terms of rental and that sort of thing, but what goes inside the building we carry. So we don't get any grant from the hospital rehab grant, for example. So the hospital will build the lab, but we've got to put everything in. And everything inside we would maintain. So the painting and the air conditioning and the maintenance, etc. So we've provided 212 because there's quite a significant backlog. I mean, in your own province, Chair, if you go to the Eastern Cape, the quality of our labs are highly problematic now, because we've not been able to make investments. Or part of it is we've not been able to expand in the site because the hospitals don't have the space as well. So 212 for laboratory equipment, for us to stay at the appropriate level of technology, we got to constantly evaluate and bring in new technologies as contracts come to an end. So we provided 66 million. And, you know, these may sound like large amounts of money, but in relation to the overall budget, they're not significant. 66 million. Computer equipment and software, because the platforms, et cetera, with the demand for data and the demand for the new trackier system, the demand for storage, et cetera, we need to modernize systems. So we provided 83 million, but the 83 million also includes the completion of TrackCare in that 83 million rand. And in going forward, it won't be as high as this. And then for furniture and fittings, there's 8 million rand, and office equipment, 30 million rand. And that office equipment is, we need to do some major changes to our HR and that sort of thing, because we're sitting in office space with hostels that are under the building, and our offices are above the stables. So now it's posing all kinds of health problems, and we need to refurbish all of that. So we made a provision for that, and that's the 399 million rand. So, Chair, that at a kind of high level, and I know I've rushed through it, but at a high level, it gives you a sense of where we're coming from, where what we've achieved over the last two years. And you'll get a more detailed presentation in September of this year or thereabouts, and where we are right now. But where we are right now is also with the understanding that we have a new board that's coming in, and some elements of it may be reviewed. So, Chair, I thank you and the honourable members for giving us this opportunity to present, and I hope that gives you some kind of sense and comfort about where we're going to over the next 12 months.
Thank you very much, Jackie. We thank you very much for the report. I'm hoping, members, that you were writing your questions, and then now the term is almost 1:05. So let's go for lunch now and then come back at 1:05, and then we'll interrogate you with questions. Hmm? 1:05. What is it? 1:01.